right, welcome to another edition of the fastest 40 minutes in podcast. Even though with Seth, I did quite a few Tiger Board radios here where even when we're just doing this over Skype, I can feel him giving me little hand motions like, wrap it up, you're talking too much. And so even though we are via Skype, Seth, I will still hear your, I will feel your hand motions here.
You can feel me doing this already?
Yeah, well, pretty much, because, you know, it's 45 seconds and I haven't actually said anything yet. Anyway, I'm here with Seth. I'm here with Ross. We welcome Seth back after a couple of weeks of, well, basically just going with me and Ross. I think that's mostly as much due to my own fixing up the new house schedule as much as anything, if I remember correctly. But, you know, whatever. All right. So we have sort of a lot to talk about, I guess, considering like what we'll be dealing with later in the summer when there's really nothing to talk about. We've got a full slate. So first up, Save Chuck. Watch Chuck's season finale Monday night. I'm doing my part.
I love that show. That show is fantastic.
And fantastic show. And this came up on our friend Pess, his Facebook wall. Started a rather lengthy argument about that. Pointed out that I am both 100% behind Chuck, although that's probably 80% behind Ellie and Sarah, and maybe only 20% behind Chuck.
But that's fine. See, the greatness of Chuck is everybody has a reason to watch.
Hey, and I'm all for Jordana Brewster as well. I'll thrust 20% behind her all the same. So.
Did you really have to use thrust in that context?
And just confirming that I will have to know if my wife actually listened to this or not, because she would give me crap for that.
I will give you crap for that.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
moving on.
Jordana's a bonus, but just give me, you can have Jordana, I'll take Sarah. Ross, you can have Ellie.
All right.
All significant others will understand. Actually, Sarah, Yvonne Strahovski, is that her name? She was on my Facebook top five celebrity crushes list, so therefore it's illegal if you know I get the opportunity. I think that's how that works.
Is she number four after Lawrence Bowers?
Zing.
Wow.
Welcome back, Beef.
Yeah, why are you here? Just don't talk until the All Sports Report.
Don't give him that option.
Yeah, true. Because otherwise he'll just tune out and watch the Devils game some more. Okay. So to talk about Mizzou sports, because I not that it matters. Anybody who's listening to these things has already read everything we have to say. But we should talk about the Black and Gold game.
Yes, we should.
So, Ross, I'll start. No, actually, Seth, I'll start with you since you weren't there.
Okay.
What were your thoughts?
You know, I think I wrote about this a little bit in the musings just from having read about it. I'm still encouraged as to where this team is as a whole, as a team. Yes, would I have liked to have seen a little better offensive statistical results? Certainly. But my feeling is that it's especially in light of all of the injuries to the wide receivers, Alexander and Perry, who you both assume are either starting or in the smallest mix of people who see the time not playing at all this spring, the eventual injuries to Agnew, who seem to be coming on strong, as well as John McGaffey. Blaine Gabbert simply didn't get a chance to work with the people he's very likely going to work with next fall, and that time is really going to come this summer. We all marveled last summer as Chase Daniel was out there literally being a coach at one half of the time and a quarterback the other half of the time. You know, Gabbert is going to throw thousands of balls this summer to guys like Wes Kemp, to guys like Denario Alexander and Jared Perry. Those timing and that timing and those relationships are going to form then, I think, even a little bit more so than they do in the spring. The spring, I think, really can be more about the defense, and if that is in fact the case, then I am very encouraged from what we saw this past spring, both from a performance standpoint, but just a change in personality and kind of creed and kind of seeing the early stages of what Dave Steckel is going to bring to the table for as a defensive coordinator, and I am very encouraged by that.
And I will say that Chase Daniel also looked like a coach this Saturday with his, you know, his shorts, his little coach's Nike shirt tucked into his shorts, looking like he had just come off 18 holes of golf. He's already got that look down, so if the pros don't work out, then we know exactly where he's headed. Ross, what were your thoughts?
You know, we've gotten so used to having a godless killing machine of an offense that any time that they stumble a little bit or just look the least bit confused, it's confusing to all of us who've gotten so used to the last 3 years or so. Beef brought up a great point that is not the offense we're going to see in the fall. We can't guess what the production's going to be officially just because we don't know. The pieces are not in place yet. That's something we need to keep an eye out for in the fall. I was both encouraged and discouraged by Brendan Drew. Dave Matter actually tweeted during the game after Drew dropped that third down pass in the red zone, saying that that proves that he actually is human. It was such a bad day to try to judge the offense because by all accounts, the people who have seen them day in, day out said that the offense has been there and Gabbert's looked good, the receivers have stepped up, and it's something you just kind of have to take with a grain of salt that what we saw on that day cannot be 100% indicative of spring ball and what we think we're going to see in the fall.
Right. I mean, Derek Washington is going to be a majorly utilized weapon this fall when it comes to settling the young quarterback down and, you know, falling forward and getting yards and setting up, you know, non-passing down type of situations. And he touched the ball like three times. I mean, this was not a scrimmage to see guys who we already, you know, known quantities. It was not a scrimmage to see the known quantities. It was to check out the new guys. And, you know, Jarrell Jackson did look good. Wes Kemp looked pretty solid in the Justin Gage routes. Well, and as has been mentioned before, with Justin Gage's face. the O-line, it's hard to judge the lines because, you know, usually if one of them does good, that means the other did bad. But, you know, the DNs looked really fast and strong, and the offensive tackles, especially the first-teamers, seemed to handle them pretty good. So I liked that. The running game, when it was attempted, worked just fine. But, I mean, we know what to expect from the running game. The same slow-developing handoff that works more than you think it should. And with two running backs, it appears that both really bring something pretty good to the table. Defensively, I was pleased just because the first team dominated. That's what you always want to see when they're going up against the second-team offense. They looked mean and fast and aggressive, and that's all I'm going to read into it because the second-team Missouri offense, especially with third-team wide receivers, basically, they're only, you know, Furman probably doesn't have as good an offense as the Missouri second-team offense. No offense to the Paladins or Paladin fans listening right now. But, you know, pretty much everybody else we play is going to be better than that, so there's no need to read into it more than that. But in all, you know, it didn't rain too much. We did get to see Blaine Gabbert basically roll to his left, find nobody open, and go, let's see how far I can wing this rolling to my left.
A pass that Tim Griffin, nonetheless, called barely incomplete as it sailed 6 yards over his receiver's head.
Being that I'm 100% confident that Tim Griffin isn't listening to this podcast right now.
Or barely paying attention to things that go on outside of the state of Texas.
Or, you know, yeah. Or Lubbock and Austin, to be specific. Or College Station, really, I guess, too, yeah.
But I do want to bring up something.
We love you, Tim.
Yeah, sure.
I do want to bring up something that, Bill, you touched on a second ago, as well as in your defensive postmortem, in that all three of the primary defensive end, the defensive end Smith and Coulter, they very rarely were found out of position in the spring game. I don't know if that has something to do with the second team failing to exploit that, but last season when you saw Jacquees and Brian Coulter, it seemed like you could see the athleticism, but so many times they got themselves caught upfield and found themselves out of position to make a play. Their gap discipline was not good. Again, you can't read too much into the spring game, but that had to at least be a positive sign.
Yeah, in Brian Coulter's case last year, he often found himself upfield before the ball was snapped.
Especially the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, it seemed like things were good there. It's going to be a fun few months now where, as everybody not only picks Nebraska, and I'm bringing this up because Seth is on, I want to see him rant about this a little bit, but... you know, not beyond Andre Ware, who was the first one to you know, stick the flag in the ground saying Missouri's going to suck next year. We are going to get to prepare ourselves for people not only picking Nebraska and Kansas to finish above Missouri in 2009, which they very well could, but Colorado as well. So I just want to throw it out there that everybody just needs to prepare for this, realize it doesn't matter. And in my case, I realize this while at the same time getting annoyed because I want to watch smart analysis and not, you know, the knee-jerk kind of stuff where everybody just says conventional wisdom type things. Anyway, does anybody have any follow-up to that? No? Good. So we should move on now to... Well, does anybody have anything else to say about football before we move on to basketball?
Should we touch on the General Mills meme that was born during the spring game?
Absolutely. And for those who have been, I think I forget this every year, but anytime you go to the black and gold game, they give out the most improved of each unit, little awards for the most improved at halftime. And in the Missouri system, with these coaches, it is not special teams, it is special forces. So naturally, you know, Ross and myself, and as they're known on the board, Uribe and Boom of Doom and GHTD36 showed up for a little while, and Zoo Dave were there. You know, jokes are going to be made. You know, they're probably going to be pretty funny if they're being made by, well, not by me, but others. And yeah, so it became an ongoing thing talking about how are we going to replace Admiral Wolfert, and will Corporal Grant Russell be ready to go if need be, et cetera, et cetera. And then watching Dave come up with it was Dave, I'm pretty sure, coming up with the General Mills thing on the fly and just making himself giggle for a good solid 30 seconds. from now on, that is right. As I mentioned the other day, from now on, it is not Tanner Mills. It is General Mills.
And I love how you wrote it out exactly how Dave said it.
Yeah. But it's just, it was great to win. That was probably my favorite moment of the whole black and gold game is Dave laughing at his own joke. There's nothing... There's really nothing to top that. And being that I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen to these things, I'll throw that out there just in case he actually does.
I love his tone. Sergeant Mills, Corporal Mills, General Mills, yes!
And a bunch of girlish giggling.
It's what we come to count on from Dave.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
lots of tears, lots of girlish giggling, lots of, well... F-bombs, which
F-bombs,
which are not necessarily welcome, but, you know, to each his own.
Time for basketball.
All right, basketball. That was actually, that only took like 8 or 9 minutes. That's, last time Ross and I talked football, it was like a good solid hour and a half or something like that, so go us.
I'm pleased to announce, by the way, the Devils have finally broken on the board.
How many shots did it take?
About 47.
All right, well, Kevin Smith's Twitter feed just exploded.
You got it.
All
right. We're still efforting.
Well, you let us know.
That'll come in the All Sports Report.
All right, so to basketball, where, well, first of all, very quickly, the reports are coming out that Melvin Watkins is being considered for the Appalachian State job, and he's one of on a short list. He says, I don't know what you're talking about, I haven't talked to them. But we'll see where that leads. I do figure if he were to go, then it just makes sense to move Zimmerman up to that head assistant job. And I don't know, promote Matt Lawrence to the staff, graduate staff. I don't know. But
what's Brian Grauer doing these days?
That's right. Yeah, he's missed that guy. Love that kid. He was the original Love That Kid, I'm pretty sure, before Tommy Saunders. It was all about Brian Grauer. In other basketball news, there was basically one major recruit left on the board for Missouri this spring. It's a fun recruiting schedule where most of your 2009 class happens before the 08-09 season, and so you're not going to see really any payoff whatsoever for a good season until the following season. Jared Famous was still on the board, appeared to have liked his Missouri visit much more than he intended to or expected to. Visited Arizona last weekend. He had also visited Seton Hall in South Florida. We were pretty sure, everybody was pretty sure it was between Missouri and Arizona, and he picked South Florida. Stan Heath is a good recruiter, and I guess that was one of the major draws, and just the fact that I guess he has relatives in the area. Others have brought up the heavy prevalence of strip clubs. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but, you know, can't blame a dude. He's, you know, probably 20, 21 years old. It was a surprise, and that basically means that heading into next season, Missouri really only has one definite signee in Michael Dixon, the guard from Lee's Summit.
I believe the duly crowned Missouri High School Player of the Year.
I would hope so. It seemed a pretty thin year in Missouri, and he seemed to be as good as advertised for when he returned from an injury this season. He's a definite, I think he's got a lot of potential. Everybody likes him a lot. We have guards, though, so we were hoping the other two scholarships would more likely go towards big men. One big man has signed in Cheris prep star Keith DeWitt, 6'10 to, I don't know, 15, I think.
Sounds
good. 195, 160, I don't know. Cheris prep has been made an example of, according to the Cheris coach, and just with weird practices, educational eligibility issues across the board. Supposedly, all Keith DeWitt has to do is pass the HCT, and he will be in a Missouri Tiger uniform next year. Who knows? I mean, there might be other issues still about coursework completed, things like that. It's anywhere between about a 30% chance and a 70% chance that DeWitt shows up. Hopefully he does, because as it has become less likely that he would be in a Tiger uniform, his myth has grown, and suddenly he's a big-time offensive player. Hopefully that's true, and hopefully he shows up in black and gold. But without Famous, there's probably at least one more scholarship to give. Power Mizzou, as always, is the source for recruiting information. They've done a good job of kind of trying to summarize who's left on the board. And I believe the main guy left, coming for a visit sometime in the next week or two, is a power forward named Cliff Dixon. Because signing two guys named Dixon is not confusing at all. He's from, I don't know, a JUCO. Does anybody have, I'm trying to pull up some information. He averaged about 15-8 last year Hutchinson, that's where he's from Hutchinson JUCO. That's not, you know, we're all shocked and awed by Jared Famous's, whatever it was, 26-13 that he averaged last year. But 15-8 is pretty good. You figure that might translate to 9 or 10 points and 5 or 6 rebounds a game. That's certainly a start. That would be a welcome addition. Sounds like there's competition from, again, some Eastern schools for the most part. But, you know, if they can't land Dixon, what are you guys' thoughts regarding whether they should try to find somebody else to fill a scholarship, or whether they should just say, you know, we're going to have a hole in the middle next year if Safford, Ramsey, Moore, and Bowers don't cut it as a unit? And, you know, my own man crush of Lawrence Bowers says he'll average 27 points next year and it's not going to be a concern. But what do you guys think about whether they should fill that scholarship or not?
I think that it may in fact be in our best interest to fill that scholarship. And I think it could even be okay to do it with a junior college player, as you put them on a different schedule than the Moores and Bowers at this point. Wouldn't be bad to add somebody with a little bit of experience. It looks like we're also looking at a young man, a wingman from Maine Central Institute. Martino Brock will be visiting.
Love that name.
He is more of a small forward, which too I think is not a bad spot for us to go after with the departure of the Grey Goose. You have Kim English there, obviously, who you expect to be the starter, but it wouldn't be, and obviously, you know, an excess of guards, but it wouldn't be a terrible thing to have someone who really can back up that real typical three type of position, maybe a gunner, that sort of thing. So, you know, looking at that, I heard all along that even with Mike Dixon and DeWitt, we could go as many as 4 scholarships this season, although evidently the staff was looking more towards 3. Long story short, I think it's a fine idea for us to bring someone in. I think that simply as we saw this year, the more people we have, really, they're going to play. It's not like we're bringing in a body to sit the bench. Now, the most interesting and intriguing storyline for me may in fact be the development of Steve Moore.
Yeah.
And what he is going to bring to the table next season, along with the offensive development of the players like Ramsey and Bowers, because certainly we appreciate their defensive skills, how they play certainly much bigger than they are, but we are certainly going to need to replace a good amount of scoring on the inside that we will lose with the departure of Lyons and Carroll.
This is exactly where you have to trust in Mike Anderson. And I think, like you said, it boils down to Steve Moore. If Steve Moore is ready to be a night-in, night-out contributor, I'm not saying he has to put up major points, but where he can eat minutes and that the team is not at a deficit when he is on the floor, I think you're able to carry over that scholarship, presuming that Missouri is able to take the momentum from this year and apply that into its recruiting system. If that momentum can't be sustained, if Steve Moore can't step up and eat those minutes, then maybe you do have to go look at a JUCO level or be able to fill that scholarship just so you have another body to be able to run the system that we've got accustomed to this year.
Well, Moore seems to have, I mean, his biggest problem right now, just in the limited action we saw last year, is kind of Greg Odenitis in that he seemed to be a good rebounder. He might have some offensive skills, hard to tell in the garbage time that he played, but he needs to learn how to not foul. That will get you, very obviously, that will get you off the court very quickly. And if he, when you think about it, if we don't sign anybody else, that means that, you know, either two out of the three from Bowers, Ramsey, and Safford have to now play Damari and Leo minutes. And then somebody else has to play, the third one basically has to play the minutes that both Safford and Ramsey played this year. And then, you know, Moore plays, I don't know, Bowers' minutes or something. That's a lot to ask for from that group. And I'm not one who, I don't like just filling a scholarship because, you know, for an extra body, but in this case, it really might kind of be necessary. I do like the thought of Martino Brock, especially because that's a lot of minutes for a six, you know, if we don't sign him, then a 6'2 guy or something is going to be playing a lot of minutes, a small forward, which isn't that unusual, but it's still not optimal. But yeah, I mean, the key right now is Moore. And since we don't know anything about Moore, I'm only reasonably optimistic that he can play more than 6 or 8 minutes a game. I do think that we should probably try to find some JUCO guy who can at least give you another 6 or 8 minutes a game. So, that's basically the basketball news right now. For the next few months, we'll be talking mostly about football. But for the next couple months, or at least, I don't know, month, we will continue to deliver the All Sports Report. And thank God Seth is here, because I apologize greatly. I take Ross's and my All Sports Report last week was so bad, mostly mine. It was so bad, I take the blame for last night's losses by the Mizzou baseball and softball team. So that's all on me, even though it was a week after it happened and both teams played pretty well over the weekend. Regardless, it was my fault that they played poorly yesterday. So without further ado, and we're only at the 22-minute mark, so we're doing very well here. Seth,
I've been waving you home since about the 10-minute mark.
That's true. Yeah, I feel it. I have to hurry up now. Take over, Seth.
All right, to tie up a loose end, previously it was, in fact, David Clarkson scoring the first goal for New Jersey on a redirect in front of the net. But here we go. We'll start with Mizzou softball, and why not now, currently sitting at 41-6, as we alluded to earlier. Kind of a tough split with Iowa State. I did cover most of the first, actually, in the end, all of the first game. The bats really weren't there, and it's tough to say that when you win 5-0, but a lot of opportunities missed, and they just didn't seem to get the clutch hits that we're accustomed to seeing them get. Stacey Delaney was on, giving up only 3 hits for the game. She didn't even give up a hit until late innings. Coming back in the second game, good to see freshman Chelsea Thomas back out there. She had been dominant in non-conference play, really was one of the catalysts to the start of the season and why we are where we are now, but had been injured. She pitched a little bit last weekend before getting her first start in quite some time. Struck out 9 in the game, but gave up 4 runs, most of those at the beginning. And again, the bats not really coming through. Mizzou made it close at the end, but fell 4-3 before all was said and done. They're currently 11-3 in the conference. An absolutely huge weekend series this weekend against Oklahoma, who is number 2 in the Big 12. Games on Saturday and Sunday. I know Sunday's looking a little iffy for weather, but at this point on Saturday, if you're around, I believe you should be able to get almost all of this game in before the NFL draft starts. It is worth your while and worth your time to get out there, because right now this team has a very good shot and is still really in the driver's seat to win a Big 12 regular season championship, which is certainly something that we all pine for on an annual basis. Moving over to baseball, tough loss last night for Mizzou as they lost to rival Kansas at the new and, from what I understand, greatly improved Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. Losing 7-3, that puts the Tigers back to that kind of evil 500 mark at 21-21. They are 8-10 in the conference. They will welcome Texas Tech to Columbia this weekend for games right now scheduled for Friday at 6:30, Saturday at 2, Sunday at 1. I imagine that Sunday game may be a little bit tenuous depending on what the weather report looks like. Texas Tech not quite as bad as they've been in the past, sitting at 20-24, but they are 9-9 in conference, so this looks to be fairly even. Lord only knows who's going to pitch for Mizzou after Friday, when obviously Kyle Gibson will see the mound. We could be looking at Johnny Holstaff in both games. Perhaps Nick Tepish does get the start on Sunday. We just don't know at this point. Needless to say, it has been an entertainingly strange season for the Mizzou baseball team. We'll move over to outdoor track. The team this weekend, some of the team up in Des Moines, Iowa, participating in the 100th running of the Drake Relays, the second oldest relays next to the Penn Relays, which is also strangely this weekend. I don't know why they would do that, but they seem to. Mizzou has 36 athletes there, 20 men and 16 women. You do have to be invited to participate in this. This is not your typical college competition. While certainly they run college-level competitions, it is open to everyone. In years past, certainly Kristen Cantwell has been there. I don't even know. He may even be there again this year. The teams did quite well last weekend down in Arkansas. A lot more of our athletes gaining qualifying either times or distances. Chris Rohr continues to have a phenomenal senior season, both from the indoor season they had previously and the outdoor season. One of the best hammer throwers in the country, so certainly someone we can look forward to seeing at the NCAAs. And on the women's side, Shannon Leinhart has really brought back what Mizzou used to be dominant in, which was the 800 meters, runners like Ashley Weissong and folks right around the turn of the decade. She is now back with the 800 meters and doing well from week in and week out. And so it's good to see that that distance is kind of back on the national map for Mizzou. Moving to women's golf, we've got the women playing in the Big 12 Championships this coming weekend. The team's been pretty hot, three straight fifth or better finishes, top five finishes. They will be down in Lubbock, Texas. This will start tomorrow. Certainly you can follow it along on Muttigers.com. GolfStat.com is another great website. They should have live scoring. Julia Potter, the name to watch out for here, the Mizzou junior, always up around the top of the leaderboard and somebody who is well thought of on the national scene. But it'll be interesting to see how the ladies do here. Certainly some bragging rights points will be on the line as Kansas will be participating as well. And speaking of Kansas, the women's tennis team earlier today defeated Kansas 4-1 in the first round of the women's tennis championships down at the new and vastly improved, evidently, tennis facility at the University of Oklahoma. They won the doubles point from wins with Jessica Guigioli and Caitlin Ritchie, as well as Daniel Day and Sophia Ayala. Went on to win singles matches from sophomores Mallory Weber and Caitlin Ritchie, as well as freshman Danielle Day. They will move on to take on number one seed Baylor tomorrow. Tough task for the ladies. They ended up, at this point right now, they are 9-11 overall, 4-7 in conference. That is an improvement, as this team really is young and I think will continue to slowly improve. Blake Starkey has been with this program for a long time. Mike Alvin has kind of given him the leash to slowly build them up with the addition of the Green Tennis Facility a couple of years ago. He seems to have been able to do that, bringing in better talent. Freshman Jamie Mara ascended all the way up at one point to the number one singles player for us, and so certainly look for good things from her to come. But they will play Baylor at 9 a.m. tomorrow, so unfortunately I imagine the season might be over by about 10:30. Finally, the men's golf team. Two Tigers named academic All-Big 12, and so that's always a positive. Congrats to senior Peter Malnati, who was a first-team honoree. Sophomore Tyler Hillis was second-team. Malnati has really led this squad this year, though they haven't really done all that well, recently finishing seventh in their home tournament, which is the UMB Bang Tiger Invitational. They will fairly soon, I believe. It's not this weekend, but will be next weekend, or actually during the week next week, interestingly enough. We'll be playing in the Big 12 Championship out in Hutchinson, Kansas. And as we are only a month away from the end of the school year, that's really it for the All Sports Report.
All right, I have four things to mention. I'll try not to sound stupid, but first, Ross got disconnected about 2 minutes ago, so I'm going to disconnect you and call you both back, and I'm not even going to stop the show because I don't feel like editing it together. So hold on 1 second. All right, how fast can I do this? Start conference call. Ross, Seth, go.
And we're back.
All right, well, one of us is. Ross, still connecting. I really don't want to have to give the meme madness report, but it looks like that might have to be what happens. Okay. Until we find Ross, it's just you and me, baby.
Just like old times.
I know. All right, so four quick notes on the All Sports Report, and I promise I won't sound totally stupid, any more than normal. Number one, I'm pretty sure the Big 12 Championship is being held at the Oklahoma City Tennis Center, where I went to state and played at state four straight years.
That is actually not true. It is in fact Norman.
Ah, damn it.
You want to throw the other three out there, or you want to just give up now?
Well, no, I'll go ahead. Number one, Nick Teppish. He didn't pitch very well on Saturday, but he got screwed by his defense. And I would have no problem with him actually going against Sunday. I figure that's probably what happened, since it's Johnny Holstaff on back-to-back nights. It's a little dicey. So that's what I'm expecting there. That's two. That didn't sound too stupid. Number three, Chris Rohr is, every time I see his numbers from throwing, it really, I mean, he is every bit as good as these last 10 years of Mizzou throwers have been, except for maybe Cantwell.
Unfortunately with Rohr, he just kind of came on as a senior, where the rest of them really had a couple of years in the program of continued results. So if Rohr was...
Oh, no. Wow. Almost. We actually almost lost you there for a second. Hey, say something.
I'm still here.
Okay, well, all right, well, anyway, and then the final thing, Ashley Weissong was hot.
Yeah, oh, God. God bless her. She was, I hate to say this, but it's going to sound this way. She was in charge of, well, no, I can't even say. She was in charge of the Student Athlete Advisory Council, which otherwise was known as SAC. So she and I, in my time in the athletic department, did work very closely together. The joke there, you would take SAC. Anyway, but she was the quintessential student athlete in that she finished up her education at Mizzou, still had one semester left, I think, of indoor track that she could run, and decided to just go to Stanford and do it because she was smart enough to do that. I believe now she is at Duke finishing her PhD in something ridiculous, and I certainly wish her all the best.
All right, well, Ross says he's back, so we're going to try this again. This is real life. This is like listening to a live radio, right? All right, I'm going to hang up on you. Okay, one more time. This is just... Thrilling radio, I'm sure. Ross, Seth, go. All right, Seth. Oh, we got them both.
Hey.
Well, we'll see how long this lasts. But so anyway, really Ross.
Madness right now.
Yeah, I said a lot of stupid things about all sports, and now it's your turn to go with a madness update.
Ready to roll?
Yeah, let's go. I never actually stopped recording, so just whenever.
All right. Well, starting today, we have. Are we considering this an upset? I know it's a 2-6, but considering how much the Armin community continues to surprise us with the voting, will Zoo Dave's sister going down be an upset?
Whoa!
Zoo Dave's sister going down is now okay. Yeah, it's
I didn't know if Bill was actually going to catch it this time.
Well, we'll just say that it's not an upset, but it's still a bit of a surprise, as it was. We were looking at our first actual close battle for a while. What was it, like 25-25? And since then, God, there are so many things I could say right now, but I'm just going to instead say that Zude's sister is losing.
We might be safe just leaving it at that.
Or as Andy O1 said on the board just now, I certainly didn't expect her to just roll over and take it like this.
Win.
Okay, anyway, moving on.
Moving on into the Capital Regional, we have what should be another interesting matchup, but we can't expect anything from this competition. That much we've learned so far. Mr. Coffee, the one seed in the Capital Regional, is an Armin force. Unholy Alliance, a little bit more of a cross-blog, small market-type inside joke. It's the Green Bay or the New Jersey of this Whoa. Bracket, if you will. So you know it's got the potential to do something great. It just doesn't perhaps have the fan base it needs, but an interesting matchup nonetheless.
Well, I'll tell you this:
I will not discount the effort that may be put forth by our buddies over there.
Bingo,
PB. I think they will show up en masse and look out for the upset here.
That is correct. Anyway.
Which, by the way, if you are not going to bring on the cats and going to the K-State slate put together by our friend Pinjandrum and reading the K-State Collegiate Forum, you're missing out on some incredible, incredible comedy. I highly recommend that on weekdays you head over there and check that out. Moving back to the bracket, at the bottom half of the Capital Regional, we have Mother Rucker versus Disrespect. I don't expect any contest here at all. Disrespect. It's an absolute force. I think the two seed a lot of people, maybe that's disrespect that it didn't get a one seed, especially after the way Bacon went down to Laffy Saffy last week. I think we are most likely staring down a 1-2 in the Capitol. If you guys have anything to add on that?
Well, I just said...
I just can't believe we're actually talking about this.
And going into great analysis. All I know is I'm no better at predicting winners here than I am in the real bracket. So I guess that makes it a pretty legitimate thing, actually.
We what was it? We picked the as soon as we got to the Sweet 16, we were perfect to the Final Four, were we not?
That is true, but getting to the Sweet 16 was a major, major problem.
Just like it was in this, so who
exactly.
knows from here on out.
True, true.
Moving up into the Schlafly Regional, we've got the 1 seed Thrust Nunchuck upwards against the 5 seed Junkyard Dog. This may be a very legitimate case of basketball. I don't want to say bias because people are getting mad about that, but at least the basketball bump, if you will, that seems to be going on here with Junkyard Dog more recently completing his career. But could Thrust Nunchuck upward get the yet-to-be-seen draft bump? We'll have to wait and see. At the bottom of the Schlafly Regional, we have a 3-versus-2 matchup, which I believe... Yes, it is. That is our only 3-2 matchup that made it through. All the other 6 seeds appear to have won. Grey Goose versus True Flare. I think that's a fantastic matchup. You've got a very, very solid Armin, a specific meme in True Flare against what's still an Armin specific meme in Grey Goose, but it has the support of the basketball bump and the recently completed career of Matt Lawrence. That should be a fantastic matchup.
I think there is no, well, a lot of these are very, very organic to rock in, but there is no more organic a nickname than Grey Goose when all is said and done, considering everybody was basically, now granted, MC Boom of Doom hated him a lot more than anybody else did. But the season, the flow to the season was pretty consistent where nobody really, he couldn't really make any threes. We all wondered if, you know, when Ken English was going to take him over in the starting lineup. One person randomly says, does that mean his nickname's Grey Goose? And we all laughed about it. And then, like, within 2 weeks, everybody was saying, Goose! Every time he did something good. And by the end of the season, it was the same thing, only with more O's and more exclamation marks at the end. But, yeah, no, that's a good matchup. I'm thinking Goose might take him, but I'm always wrong, so we'll see.
Hey, Goose should be favored if you look at the seeding, but when has seeding ever mattered
exactly.
in the first couple of rounds this tournament? Moving into the Boulevard Regional, our final regional, we have an all-basketball matchup at the top of the bracket. We've got the Cinderella of the tournament so far, number 8, Laffy Saffy. No idea how it got past Bacon, but I will respect that, against number 4 Party Starter, who very handily defeated Uribe Simpson's references, proving, in fact, that Milhouse is not a meme. But, yeah. Touché.
Thanks.
And then at the bottom of the bracket, we have, let's see, number 6 Handshakes, which managed to get by the young but very, very positive upside in Kimme, against number 2 Brass Bonanza, which got called out in its most recent matchup with GHTD36's love of Kendall Lawrence. I think this is proof you don't call out Brass Bonanza. That sounds like disrespect to me, and we know what disrespect can do on our site.
But what if we get to a point where somebody disrespects opponent? What happens?
If that's going to happen, I believe in Mother Rucker playing the disrespect card against disrespect. That sounds like that sounds very legitimate to me.
My world just exploded.
But that will round out the Sweet 16, and we will head forward into the Elite 8 before you know it.
Well, the fact that we can continue to analyze this like a real tournament just shows you how. Well, how great Rock'em Nation really is. Right?
I think,
right?
Honestly, the fact that we have any women in our lives is really the most amazing thing at this stage.
The only thing more amazing is that, according to our survey from a couple days ago, which, great idea, Ross, by the way, according to our survey, 6% of Rock'em Nation readers are female. I don't even think my wife took that survey, so it didn't even count her, so wow. Anyway, all right. As we approach the 40 minutes, and I'm sure it's been as fast a 40 minutes for you as it has been for us. It always is. A couple quick notes. Number one, you've probably noticed that since we named GHTD36 an official author of the site, he's barely authored anything. That changes tomorrow. Be on the lookout for the first of an ongoing series. Should be very entertaining. And as a reward for those of you, and I'm talking about the 3 of you who are still listening right now, as I mentioned, well, to this morning, actually, this afternoon, I am starting to pull together materials. I'm trying to commit myself to writing a book about Missouri football. And just randomly over the next, well, probably a couple years, I'll be writing about different seasons that took place in random order, just as I come across materials or as I get the urge to do so. So anybody listening now, if you in the comments want to write about a certain season that you want to see, that you want to read about a little bit more, that's your reward for listening this far. Just name it out, and that'll be the next one I do, or one of the next ones I do. So you got that to look forward to, which is nice.
Which is nice.
All right, we should also add that if anybody is not going to be A, drinking, or even if you are drinking for that matter, as long as you are not going to be on another SB Nation site supporting your favorite pro football team, make sure to join us for the NFL draft on Saturday. And heck, why not even Sunday? And in fact, we just got word that ESPN will have a remote with Jeremy Maclin, so you'll get to see what I assume is he and his family celebrating once he goes off the board.
If you're really lucky in that thread, I may join it after drinking 32 different beers, one for each pick in the first round.
Yeah,
Beer draft.
Spend 60 seconds describing this for those who haven't.
This year, Beer Draft 3, Fight for the Bell, as so aptly named by Pez. This is something that started, obviously, 3 years ago. A friend of mine, also on the board, who at this point will keep nameless just to protect him, who works for a local major beer conglomerate, was able to accrue and amass 32 different varieties of beer, either produced or imported by said conglomerate. That year, only three of us participated. We thought we could split two beers between the three of us. This resulted in my friend not knowing still when Brady Quinn was selected in that draft. Last year, we added some more people to it. I became the official pourer, and many of us actually did make it through all 32 beers as we sample approximately 3 ounces of each beer. It also involves me trying to select the order of the first round, because with each pick of the first round, that beer is tied to them. So I do have to try to predict, perhaps not in order, but at least the 32 people selected for the draft. I am always a huge proponent and favorite of Bud Dry, and so that name will probably be attached to Matthew Stafford for this upcoming draft.
And I just got buzzed thinking about all that, so yeah. All right, well, I guess this wraps up another thrilling fastest 40 minutes in podcasting. That was actually more like 43 minutes. Does anybody have any requests for the going out song here?
I'd say we go. Well, I guess we came in with what we
the Bonanza, yeah.
But I'd say Running with the Devils, just because my laptop died and I don't know what's going on in the game currently. But.
Well, your wish is my command. Here's Running with the Devils, and I don't know. Go Tigers.
Okay. Van Halen out.